This is the Goalkeeper Roundtable, hosted by Dr. Bill Steffen, with Jeff Shook, George Costellas, and Dave LaTourette. Welcome back, everyone. In this episode of the Goalkeeper Roundtable, Kat Mertz joins us for a terrific discussion. Kat is currently the assistant women's soccer coach at the University of Oklahoma, while her background also includes head coaching stops at St. Louis University, the University of Nevada at Las Vegas, and the University of Oregon. Kat also has spent a number of years coaching within the U.S. Women's Youth National Team setup and was part of the staff that won the Under-20 World Cup in 2008. Kat brings a well-balanced, professional, an insightful perspective to the table, and she introduces us to Patrick, the starfish save. We hope you enjoyed the discussion with Dr. Bill, GK, Shooky, Lotto, and La Gata.
Okay, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, pick one. Today, we have a very special guest. Kat Mertz is here from the University of Oklahoma. Kat and most of us go back a few years through various staff and coaching associations and so forth. So anyway, Kat, this is the Goalkeeper Roundtable. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm not sure, you know, what kind of fun we're going to get into today, but let's go.
It'll be PG-13, PG-13 fun.
Okay. The first 5 minutes it will be.
Yeah, we'll delve off into something else later. Kat, one of the things, obviously, this past year has been a real difficult and different year. In terms of training your college goalkeepers, has that delved from the typical, okay, we're just going to prepare you for games, or we are going to develop you, or that blend? It's not exclusively one or the other, but that blend, has that shifted much this year due to the pandemic and the situation with scheduling and so forth?
Well, I mean, you know, this year has been an interesting year for, you know, our staff, or a new staff at the University of Oklahoma, coming in and, you know, going through and evaluating players. I think that's like, we came in January, Mark Carr is the head coach. And, you know, for us, it was trying to figure out where we are as a team, and then moving into the fall and trying to figure out if we're going to have a fall, to be honest. I mean, that was, you know, the big topic with college athletics, obviously, and Big 12 decided to have a fall season, you know, and all we did was play conference opponents. So right there, we take off half of our games, and, you know, our preseason was going to be the same time. So we came in August 1st, if you will. But our first game wasn't until scheduled for September, middle of September, but then that got postponed because of COVID. And so our first game really wasn't until October. So, you know, we had a longer preseason, if you will. We had a longer non-conference schedule time to really develop, you know, our goalkeepers, our team. And so with that being said, we were able to do a little bit more probably in the sense of than a normal college season where you're thrown into games right away and you only have, you know, 2 weeks to prepare for your first game. So we were able to break things down even more. You know, what does distribution look like? What does, you know, crossing look like? What is, you know, how do we implement our playing style with our goalkeeper and our backs and our team? And so, you know, I think the planning all around, and, you know, we were all collective with that. You know, what is the end goal? What does that starting goalkeeper look like? And then how do we work backwards from there?
And again, this, I don't know if this is it's probably an odd question and so forth, but is it more for the team than the goalkeepers, but given the nature of goalkeeping collegially, you know, basically you have a starter and the starter plays and the reserve is there in case something happens, game gets one-sided, somebody gets hurt, stuff like that. Did you see much in college soccer of that changing? In other words, because this season is such an odd one, it's kind of like a one-off, let's give the reserve a game. You know, let's give this, you know, backup a game to see what they can do to give them an experience to help develop them. Did you see much of that collegiate?
I think, Bill, to give some depth to our listeners, the idea, if they're not aware, is that it wasn't like the season didn't matter, because it matters developmentally. Yeah. But it didn't matter as far as eligibility went. So the question is giving an opportunity that maybe we don't give otherwise to evaluate.
Well, yeah. The other thing, but a lot of this, good point, but the other thing, no NCAA championship.
Right.
Well, I mean, all really interesting points. And some more backstory is that the winner of the Big 12 regular season, which happens to be TCU, will qualify for the spring NCAA tournament. So, you know, in theory, was this season a true NCAA season? No, we didn't play non-conference, but we approached it as you know, one game at a time, a championship mindset. We didn't have a Big 12 tournament, you know, so we were still going to play, you know, that starting group and, you know, try to develop and try to, you know, win the game and, you know, basically being a new coaching staff, establish our philosophy and, you know, our culture moving forward for the spring. So we treated every game with, you know, how can we go out there and put our best 11 on the field? I do know though, the reserve goalkeeper, backup goalkeeper, if you will, played a huge part in college athletics, because there was a lot of times COVID positive testing. If one goalkeeper tested positive, most likely they were hanging out with the other goalkeepers, yeah, and they were, you know, someone else was positive or, a high risk contact. Case in point, Texas Tech, their first two games, they played with their backup goalkeeper. Our last game, played with our reserve goalkeeper. And I could probably go on and on with different situations throughout the season where the reserve goalkeeper was really important, was a vital point to the team's, you know, success in the sense of being ready, being, you know, prepared, you know, and being able to perform basically within, you know, 24 hours notice, because a lot of the testing would happen on game day or the day before. All of a sudden your starter's out, and then being able to step in that role.
That's an interesting point, Kat. And I hadn't considered it yet, because goalkeepers are training together so frequently. And so if one tests positive, do they all go down because they're all going to be in quarantine or they're all going to be isolated or whatever?
It was interesting, because you have to figure out locker room situation, making sure that they're not sitting next to each other, making sure that, you know, when we're training, all the goalkeeper, the whole team wore masks throughout training, rooming on a road trip, not rooming them together, making sure that they were separate. And usually goalkeepers are kind of, you know, pretty tight in nature, you know, and they want to hang out with each other. So, you know, trying to make sure that they understand the gravity of the situation. If one of them gets COVID or high risk contact, you don't want to, you know, basically put the other one at risk. So we had, you know, in our short season, two of our goalkeepers test positive for COVID. So,
wow. Jeff, did you have something?
Yeah. With the NCAA extending the eligibility of the current players, are you seeing a possible logjam of goalkeepers with incoming freshmen, fifth year seniors, or redshirt, you know, seniors? Mm-hmm. And what are your thoughts or ideas of how you guys in the college world will deal with that?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I will say we're in a spot where we have a pretty talented senior goalkeeper, and I think she's on the cusp. Like she needs another year of full development, right? And that's, you know, in the off season, that's with strength conditioning, that's with agility, that's with change of direction. And I think she could be a premier goalkeeper. So for her, this has benefited her. She started her career at Arizona State. She's a Canadian international goalkeeper, and she came in. So she's had a couple different goalkeeper coaches, but I think in this last, you know, season, she's really blossomed. So we're on the benefit side of getting now a fifth year senior back for free, basically. And we're able to train her. We have two freshmen coming in. We have a current goalkeeper, who's going to be a rising sophomore as well. But I think it'll be great for that training environment where instead of having a freshman step into this, you know, starting role, they get to learn and grow and be able to watch our fifth year senior come back. I do think it's going to be interesting. I think there's going to be a lot of possible red shirts. I think we're already seeing a lot of graduate transfers on the portal. A lot of people that just want to play for one more year and go somewhere else and get a grad school. And you don't really know if that's scholarship or if that's just coaching or what that is. But right now we've seen a lot of grad transfers on the portal. So I think there's a big market for goalkeepers. Anytime there's a goalkeeper that jumps on the portal, every college coach is kind of, you know, hey, who is it? Where is she from? Can she help us win?
Yeah. Lotto, did you have something?
Yeah, it's a really good point and two pieces of that. And I'll go back to John Murphy had talked about this earlier on one of our early podcasts. And we asked him about how he was going to approach that side to it. If you have a senior that is on some sort of scholarship money, how are you going to handle? And he talked about it's going to be performance based. And unfortunately, it might be the situation where you're going to say, listen, you can stay, but we don't have any money for you in that next semester. And, you know, they're going to maybe have to encourage players to move on to either, if they want to play that extra year, start graduate school somewhere else and stay involved. So that's a really good point. And I think from a recruiting standpoint, it's probably maybe a challenge in some ways, but it's also, there's some opportunities there where it's only 1 year that you have to invest in a player. But from the goalkeeping standpoint, making that point that you made, Kat, it hit me personally because I thought about it really as a goalkeeper. Collegiately, I didn't start to develop until my junior year. I had very little exposure to any high-end goalkeeper coaching, let alone really high-end and really what I felt was good, really what I think now is good coaching in general. And it wasn't until my exposure to Soccer Plus between my junior and senior year as a staff coach, when I was there for 2 weeks, it was every day, every minute immersed in that and a total immersion. And I went into preseason a completely different goalkeeper my senior year, and I was able to utilize those tools. But I always felt like I still needed another 2 years. Like it took me to like my senior year to catch up to the level that I was playing at, which was a good Division III level. But I felt like I needed another year. And then I moved on post-collegiately and I was playing in the Connecticut Soccer League, which George is familiar with, which is, you might as well call it a pretty solid, almost professional level because there were no professional leagues. And I jumped into that and then I had to play catch up again. And I just never felt like I caught up. So I know that as a goalkeeper, I was someone that I sure as heck would have benefited from either a redshirt year to start, but also, I wish I had had COVID in my collegiate years.
Yeah.
With that, so with the 22s and the 23s, which you guys have not had a really good chance to be in a good recruiting cycle with them, do you have advice for any of the listeners who might be of that age looking to get themselves noticed without you guys being able to go out and physically watch them perform?
Yeah, I mean, film has been our number one kind of a tool. And then, you know, communication with the club coach. I think it's important. I just had this conversation with a friend of mine, club coach from Las Vegas. And, you know, she was asking what are college coaches doing? And I think the club coaches have to get on the phone and start, you know, promoting their players and, you know, finding ways to send film. I mean, everyone has Huddle these days. I know some teams also use Instat. A lot of colleges use Instat. And I think for us, our staff, Mark being at the international level with the national team, he's done so much with film and watching players on film. Now that's just kind of what we do. We sit down and we watch film and then we do our due diligence and call the club coaches and figure out what the level is. And we do a lot of comparison and, you know, hey, would this player play at, you know, Carolina. No, okay, well then is she going to play here? And we find different ways to communicate basically what we're looking for and then kind of what the strength of the player has. It's difficult time right now for the players. I would imagine there's a lot of stress for 2022s, 23s. You know, 23s is coming up here. I mean, that's kind of, we're narrowing down right now what our needs are, what are we looking for? You know, regionally, where are we going to recruit from? I don't know. It's an interesting time for recruits as well, but I would say do your due diligence and go record film and, you know, record practice, and especially goalkeepers. Like, oh my gosh, like, yeah. You know, goalkeepers, you can just put the camera down and just record a training session. And, you know, it doesn't have to be edited. That we definitely don't want to see all the good stuff. You know, we want to see your movement across the goal. We want to see your, you know, set position. You know, are you diving backwards? Like some little things in there and the little nuances that all goalkeepers are looking for. And then the bigger picture, you know, yeah, distribution. What's your decision making like in the games? And then what's your distribution like? So, but goalkeepers, I think, have a really, like, they can really make some movement with film, I think.
I remember think that going really, recruit. I think that I just on that with Kat, sorry, is that I would rather see a 30-minute, 40-minute hour training session unedited. Mm-hmm. I want to see everything, like how you respond, you know, to negative situations, to mistakes, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a really good point, Kat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I was just going to add that, get you set, George. I was just going to add that when we'd go recruiting, you'd always want to, if you're recruiting a goalkeeper, you get there in time to watch the warm up, because you never know what's going to happen in the game. So you want to see, okay, at least I can see the warm up, see what they do. George, you got something?
Go ahead. I just wanted to know from Kat, I mean, in regards to how COVID has influenced like your GK union at the school, the importance of communication is obviously essential, keeping everybody engaged. Does everybody, have you been able to kind of convey to them that, hey, this is kind of the situation, or did they know that she was going to come back? Because obviously there might be somebody that, you know, is kind of waiting their turn, as you're well aware, and, you know, is it kind of itching, and now you have the tough task of saying, hey, you got to be a little bit more patient. And so I was just wondering how you've managed your goalkeeper communication and obviously these tough situations.
Right. And we do a pretty good job. You know, the head coach, our other assistant coach, goalkeeper coach, if you will, Maurice, and myself, in the sense of lots of communication to the players with everyone, top to bottom. And I think it's important that that these women, you know their role, they know the expectations that's put on them, they know kind of what that future, you know, looks like. We had three goalkeepers at the start of the season. One's decided to, you know, transfer. She wants, you know, to play, which is great. Good for her. And then our reserve goalkeeper, she's young, you know, and she needs some development. And she knows that. You know, we've been really open and communicative with her with that. And she's a great kid. She's unbelievable, you know, unbelievable worker. But like the difference between a rising fifth-year senior starting goalkeeper and a sophomore that needs some development, there's some big gap there, right? So she needs to be able to find ways to close that gap. And I think it's been good to have like open communication in the sense of what those areas look like, you know, what are the expectations for us from, you know, coaching staff, being dominant in the air, you know, being able to shot stop, you know, what areas do we need her to be better at? Distribution's huge. You know, I think we all know that, you know, the goalkeeping world in this college game, you've got to have great feet. So, but they do, they know where they are. And, you know, I think that's important that people kind of know where they are in the depth chart and then be able to work hard to be able to close that gap.
Thanks.
Cool. Good. Okay. I wanted to come back to development a little bit, especially in season, because I know that the college soccer season is unique in across the world because of its condensation, so to speak. It's compact in its nature and number of games. What kind of development do you feel like you can really accomplish during the fall, during the competitive season?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I chuckle because every time I talk to a sports science guy about developing you know, a training model for a college season, and it's always based off of one game. And I'm like, we play two games. Yeah. We play two games, you know, and they're usually from Australia, you know, they're like, well, that doesn't make sense. I'm like, I know it doesn't make sense.
No, you can't do that. No, I'm sorry. No. You're going to have to stop doing that.
Yeah. And to be honest, this year we had one game a weekend and it was really interesting. You know, we were able to train, which was crazy.
My God.
You know, especially in that Thursday, Sunday model that most conferences kind of have gone to, you lose training. You lose a day of training, especially for team training. You know, I think goalkeepers, you can probably sneak in another training in there because of the load that they have, or it's a different type of load, if you will. But I think for, you know, the plan going into preseason is, one, it was important to figure out where we were with the goalkeepers. What, you know, are the deficiencies? Where do we need to kind of focus on? And then playing within the games was the best teacher for us. You know, case in point, we gave up a lot of goals on set pieces, and some of the stuff were, you know, boxing, punching, what does that look like in traffic? And so we were able to, you know, I'll give credit, our goalkeeper coach, she did a great job of just really focusing on those little details. And it's funny because I'd, you know, collaborate with her. I'm like, hey, have you tried it this way? Or, you know, do different things. But, you know, for that, it was, where are we as a goalkeeping unit? All three were completely different, developing the plan to kind of figure out how to get the most out of them, but then also incorporating times where you can do individualized training, you know, maybe grab one of them before practice, and then, you know, be able to separate those three qualities between each goalkeeper and have that individual time with that goalkeeper to work on those qualities. But the single game weekend really allowed for more development, allowed for more training, and, you know, allowed for more ability to kind of have some growth in there. So,
Kat, that leads me to a question then. What did you think of the split season model?
I think it would be great. But I guess I'm like part of that, you know, understanding that the spring in a lot of college programs is packed with sports. You know, I mean, we're fortunate. We don't share a facility. We are, you know, it's warm down here in the spring, so we're going outside. But I do know some of those schools, George, you would know best, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, Northeast. Now it's going to be cold.
It's going to be cold, right?
It's going to be cold.
Yeah, I was talking.
Come February. That's winter.
I know. I was talking to the University of Michigan, you know, staff, and they have to rent an indoor facility to practice, you know, like, so I think the split model is great in theory. I just don't know how it would work.
So. No, I agree, Kat. I think in theory it's fine, but again, in reality, it's going to be difficult to implement.
Could we start preseason a couple weeks early? I mean, what's, you know, can we stretch out that season a little bit?
Well, Kat,
I don't know if I had to talk about cost.
I had the conversation with G. Guerrieri, and I don't honestly know if it was in our podcast or it might have been offline. And we talked about that, you know, and it's just, can you play the same amount of matches but extend the entire season? Even just two weeks makes a big difference. Like, can we get the teams on campus earlier? Which, does it really do damage to anybody? No. Can we push the postseason another week, which you probably can? Yes, some of the northern tier countries maybe have to deal with a little bit more weather. But even just that 2 weeks, now you can separate your season enough where three matches every 2 weeks. And it really is enough. Even a couple of weeks really makes a difference in terms of balancing the load with your players. And it is a rich get richer scenario with the better teams that are deeper, i.e. a Carolina, maybe a Florida State, maybe some of those top tier, maybe a Stanford. That, I mean, teams that have a little bit more depth, it benefits them having maybe a more compressed season to be able to manage that and deal with their players. But I think there's ways to manage it without going to a split season.
And extending that, again, there's going to be the financial fallout from all this will be interesting because, again, if you're asking for an additional 2 weeks of preseason, how much does that cost? And that's what ADs are going to ask. And so I think that might be, I'm just, you know, thinking out loud, but I just think that's going to be an issue. If they say, okay, well, no, you know what, we can't afford this. And again, I hope that's not the case, but I can see that being a stumbling block, so to speak. George, I'm sorry, but you had something.
Oh, nothing. The only thing I was going to add is, but how fantastic it would be, because now you actually truly get to develop your players more. You're no longer pre-game, post-game. I mean, you are able to now utilize that whole week to train effectively and to prepare, and you play one game on a weekend. I mean, that would be fantastic. I mean, it, obviously you're emulating the professional model, which is going to be huge. And that's always been the argument, you know, coming from the pros, is that their college players aren't prepared well enough because, you know, they don't get to train as I would say train like the pros do. So it would be great to see.
I will throw this out there, though. Now I'm at Wingate, Division II, but because games are so much more regional, they're on a Wednesday-Saturday model, which they actually like quite a bit, and they play well. They, you know, now they're dealing with, on the men's side, international players who, I mean, Wingate's roster had 4 Americans out of 28 players, so the players are a little bit older, a little more mature as players to the probably aren't quite as in need of development as much as in team building, so to speak, on the field, learning each other and stuff like that. But they actually quite like that Wednesday, Saturday model. Their travel is regional. Okay. They are not on planes. They are, okay, we bus a couple hours to here. We bus a couple of hours home. We bus a couple hours here. We bus a couple hours home. That kind of model. And they're actually, the coach in there, Gary Hamill's been there for, I wouldn't want to guess how many years. And they won a national championship in 2016. They're pretty happy with that. And again, because it's much more regional, I think that's doable. Division I, obviously, Cat, I mean, you know, you're on planes for most of your away games, I would guess. And so that's not as doable.
We were actually fortunate this year. We didn't have to go to West Virginia or Iowa State. So that was nice. So I think Texas was our furthest bus trip. I think it was like eight hours, somewhere in there. But on a normal day, we would fly that, you know, but the Pac-12 for sure. I mean, they were all flying all over the place.
Oh yeah. No, you know, I remember every game was a flight. Every game, Every away game was a flight. So it's different for different people.
Well, Bill, in different regions too. And, you know, my experience at Hartford and, well, even at Dartmouth too, it was very regional. Being in New England, George, we didn't get on a flight your junior year. I don't think we flew anywhere until we flew to Virginia for the postseason. You know, every game was the farthest we went down to Delaware, down to Drexel, or we went to we played down in Washington D.C. too, a couple matches down there. But we were pretty much in a Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Sunday sort of module. And that works reasonably well. I mean, you still don't get a ton of training in, but you can recover from your matches at least in that sort of model.
Yeah. No, that's very true. And again, it's just as you mentioned though, because Kat and I both have been at Oregon, it's not doable everywhere. For better or worse, that's just the nature of the fallout of where university programs are. So it's difficult with that. Getting back to development, in terms of looking at younger goalkeepers trying to, you know, step to the next level, step to university programs, do you see any ideas or what suggestions or advice would you give to goalkeeper coaches coaching young goalkeepers who are looking to go to college? What in general do you see as a weakness? And again, I understand this is a very broad statement, but take it for what it is. In terms of what you look for, you would suggest that they develop, because I think this is lacking in our younger goalkeepers.
Gosh, that's a big question, right?
Hit it, Kat. Come on.
That's why I'm here, man. I'm the big question guy.
Yes. Okay, doctor, I will see what I can do. I don't have any of my emojis out here. I mean, it's interesting watching youth goalkeepers, right? I mean, I say this and, you know, Dave, you kind of alluded to it, you know, as time, goalkeepers get better, right? And I always say like goalkeepers like a fine wine, right? It ages better over time. And so I tend to, you know, give a lot of younger goalkeepers a lot of like slack, you know, like they're learning, they're still developing, they're still coming into their body. They're still, you know, you don't know where they are athletically and where they are physically. And then a lot of it is you don't know what their goalkeeper coaches are asking from them. And so a lot of it, I tend to see if they want to just have pure athleticism, right? Are they going to continue to be agile? Can they move in the goal? Can they get up and can they get down? Can they jump? You know, and then be able to work with that, you know, like be able to work with their set position, be able to work with their hands, be able to work with, you know, just what does their footwork look like, you know? You know, and then the other component I think is huge is their distribution. I think that's going to be a huge thing in college athletics and, I mean, college goalkeeping. I mean, I think we all see that even at the international level, the highest level, how important the distribution is. Decision-making, and I think that comes with time. You know, we've had a lot of discussion with that decision-making in the sense of, are they coming out for crosses? Are they not? What is their footwork, you know, back to bar? Sometimes it's atrocious, but I, you know, that's, you still see that everywhere. But I think I give a lot of goalkeeping just one, what is their environment that they're in? What's their training environment? Are they doing extra training? Are they the game levels? How are they, you know, are they getting action or are they on a really good team? They're just standing there. And then just trying to figure out them as a person, you know, and it's interesting because, and I don't know if you guys have seen this a lot, but finding that natural leader as a goalkeeper, like, I still think we need to like coax it and get it out of them. And, you know, even like coach them on how to be that vocal leader. You know, and I think finding a goalkeeper that's confident with themselves to be able to communicate and be able to organize, that's really rare to see at such a young age. And you tend to see that with some goalkeepers that have like high confidence within themselves and they've been in those training environments and they have good coaching behind them where they're able to communicate and lead their team. But those are like some of the things. I mean, just, you know, just what is their foot, like athleticism, what does their footwork look like? You know, the ability, the decision-making on and off the ball, and then just their overall presence in the goal. You know, those are those things. But as far as a goalkeeper coach, I think with the younger players, like it doesn't have to be complex, right? I think it's about developing good fundamentals, good basics, good, you know, handling skills, you know, what are their hands look like, and really just being basic with those movements. And then figuring out what's that young goalkeeper, how to get more out of her, you know, is it her lateral movement? Is it their ability to get off the ground? Is it, you know, their one-on-one breakaways? I'm going to tell you guys, I don't know if I can coach the starfish save. Like, I just can't do that.
Oh, man.
I was going to ask you about it.
Don't open the box.
I was going to ask about, from a collegiate, you know, being recruiting, have you been observing any of the modern trends? And if so, what have you identified? And do you teach it or have you taught it? And that's very interesting that you're immediately calling out the spread method.
You know, I like that she called it
the starfish save.
I'm not really well versed in SpongeBob SquarePants, but isn't there a starfish in SpongeBob SquarePants?
What is
the starfish's name?
Is it Patrick?
Patrick. Patrick. We're gonna call it the Patrick save.
The Patrick save.
It is the Patrick save.
I wanted to point out. We have gone over that.
There was I thought so. That's why I threw it out there.
Yeah.
I like it.
Put a match on that gasoline. There was actually in the weekend, Fulham against Liverpool, the Fulham goalkeeper,
Areola,
had a really nice. He read a through ball and he came out, stayed up, ball got played to his right, made the save. It was really textbook example of not being a Patrick. he did very well with that.
I actually have been in full discussion, you know, like, how do you do this? You know, I've been watching a lot on film, and even, you know, our goalkeeper coach, she's, you know, played with Canada in the U-17 World Cup. She's awesome, young coach. But I kind of like chuckle. I'm like, how do you get that? Like, how do you do that? But I've been reading up on it. You know, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to do it. There's different parts of the area of the field, you know, off to the side versus centrally, you know, further off your line versus closest to your line. I do think there's a time and place for it. You know, I do think, you know, there's a time and place. I think being big, you know, I think we all learned that Soccer Plus, you know, being patient with it. But I think having that presence of knowing when to be big versus smothering. And, you know, I was a big, you know, smother the goalkeeper, you know, Tony DeChico, he taught me well, you know, in the sense of our 1v1 breakaways. But I have been researching, doing a lot of, like, you know, just studying of it, because I think it's very interesting. And I'd also like to see the difference between, is there ever been a study with men versus women and the difference with the goalkeeping?
Good point, because we've talked about the, and I think the other guys are on the same page. We feel like the goalkeepers that are successful with it are the ones that use it in the right moment, and B, tend to be bigger goalkeepers, that they're spread and their arms cover more ground. And mm-hmm. and I am not a fan of the small goalkeeper using it quite as much as maybe the bigger goalkeeper. So, you know, we look at and De Gea is the first one that comes to my mind, because I think he currently overcommits to the save, and he commits early too early to that save. And, you know, the Lloris's, and just, you know, and Neuer's another one. He's a perfect example. These guys are huge. They're absolutely they're 6'5". Huge. Yeah. So it's when we all believe that there's a place for it, but it has to be used in the right moment and for the right goalkeeper. And perfect example is, I think last weekend, some people were ripping De Gea for it, and some people were like, oh no, there was a ball that came across the box, and I just thought it was a really easy decision to go and smother with your hands. And not even a smother, I think it would have been win with hands. Striker goes over the top of you, and he just sort of just let the ball drift across the front of him, and he starts to just go into this little K-save block save, and I've got to believe that strikers see it or believe that it's coming from him, and the striker just hit just a little dink chip, and it just went over the top of him. And it was, I don't know, it's frustrating for me to watch it at that level.
Yeah. Actually, I will send a lot of, you know, you may have already gotten it, but I have an article. It's called The Mueller-Lyer Illusion, which is based on when your hands are here, here, and here. And they studied, it wasn't for soccer, it was for team handball goalkeepers. Mm. And this illusion, what happens to people when they throw a penalty throw in team handball, and based on if your hands are here, here, or here.
So basically, where Patrick is putting his arms.
Yeah, where Patrick, no, not his arms. What do you call them? Pods, legs? I don't know. whatever they are. His star fonts, whatever. But what it does is it forces the person to shoot wider, which is not necessarily mean wide of the goal. It just means wide. And so in a penalty kick, I use that because when facing a penalty kick, I would stay tight because I wanted to be athletic and I wanted to be able to move. And so by staying tight, the shooter doesn't shoot as wide, which gives me a better chance at actually reading it and making me save. But that's, I'll send you guys the article. I'll send you guys the article. It was an interesting study.
Our current goalkeeper that we have here at OU, she's, you know, I always like, you have something that I wish I always had, and that's height. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, because I...
What are you laughing at, Shooky?
Because it's easy for me to get down, right? Still now. But for her, like she reads it well, and she's gotten better. She's gotten better with the timing of it, because I don't think it's an all the time thing, but she's gotten better and using it and seeing her body. But she's way taller. And I think it's an interesting point. I'd love to see a study on the differences between men and women with the Patrick save.
That would be, that would be an interesting thing. It'd be hard to control, but yeah, it would be an interesting thing to pursue. Kat, you talked a little bit about decision-making, and that's a good thing, because again, when I think back on my most recent times, like at UNCG, working with goalkeepers, and even at Carolina and Oregon, it was, a lot of it was, and G. Greary said this term, and I'm pinching it every week, it seems, the goalkeeper whisperer, where I'm standing alongside them during training, and I'll just have those little kind of conversations where, okay, do you think you could have gotten that? Or why did you go? Why did you stay? Those kind of little conversations and stuff like that. And I think those are tremendously valuable. And I think it's also, I think it happens at a much too late age. I think the younger kids can start to go through these decisions, but it's difficult in terms of training that. How do you find an environment that you can train that? Because I was exclusive with the goalkeepers at that point. So I could stand next to the goal and not worry, you know, team is scrimmaging and go for it. And I could just stand there and chat, talk with the goalkeeper. And so that was very very helpful. Aside from that, because as I said, that's not always the easiest method to do, in terms of advancing a goalkeeper's decision-making, what would be some of the things that you could throw out there for goalkeeper coaches to assist their young goalkeepers in terms of developing their decision-making?
Well, we're fortunate we film all of our training. So we have Spidio and we've got the camera behind the goal. And so that's one. I think using film to go through situations, to understand, to ask questions. Like, I think you said it right there. Like, what were you thinking? And, you know, walk me through the thought process within that decision. And I think it's, you know, gone are the days where you just tell someone to do something, right? They want to know why, they want to know how, they, you know, it's important to give them those tangible things and let them come to that decision. So, I mean, I do think that film is a huge, you know, teacher, if you have the ability to film. You know, the second thing in the sense of, like you said, is watching their decision, like in a small-sided game. I think if the goalkeeper can understand how to communicate in a small-sided game, they're able to solve things, right? Because it's such a small-sided game. It's coming at you fast. Like, you have to be able to read things. You have to make decision-making. And I always think if you can organize and communicate within a small-sided game, the bigger game will be a lot slower down. Like, it's going to be a little bit easier to process. And so, you know, really emphasizing the communication with how important that is to be able to make decisions. Right? So communicate, what does that look like? Help them with that communication so that you guys are on the same page. What does that mean when I say step and when you say tackle? And so I think that will help with the decision-making. And then the last part with that, I would say, is, you know, finding ways to incorporate, you know, drills or exercises where it's a different colored penny, or it's a decision to go through, you know, finding a different player. And so you're, you know, and that's really, like, I'm thinking footwork distribution, because I see that a lot is goalkeepers get stuck with the ball at their foot because they can't make a decision. And then they end up making the wrong decision. And so, you know, the distribution aspect of it is using different pennies, different areas of the field, you know, finding ways to add pressure to that to help them just spur that, like, thought process. But I mean, I just go back to the film and finding ways to use that as a teacher, but I realize not every youth coach has that ability. But like iPhones now, you can film anything with an iPhone. So, you know, can you get out there and film, you know, if you're going to scrimmage 11v11, great. Let's see some of the decision-making and walk through and break it down from there.
Yeah. One of the things we did, and again, it's the luxury of being able to do this and having I was working with the goalkeepers and Eddie Rolanski working with the field players, but Eddie's a great guy. I could do things with him and ask him to do this and it'd be okay. So the goalkeeper during a scrimmage, okay, I freeze. When I shout freeze, everybody stops and the goalkeeper shuts their eyes. And then I ask the goalkeeper, okay, where are players? Mm-hmm. And so that would help in terms of their broad, that's called their broad internal focus, and would help them with that because, okay, I don't know. I know where the ball is, but I don't know where anybody else is. Mm-hmm. And that would help with things like that. Lotto, you have something.
The first thing I was going to talk about was the iPhone parts, and Kat brought that up at the end of her of that piece of discussion. It says, it, even if, you know, coach is going to say, well, we don't have film or someone to film or whatever it is, you do. First off, if you normally have your iPhone in your pocket, you shouldn't. But in a, as a goalkeeper coach, think about that. Pull it out with you and pick certain days where you just 10 or 15 second moments just to show from the side, from the back, whether it's technical shape and balance. The biggest thing I've been able to get with goalkeepers is that when a goalkeeper is new to me, is if their balance is off, there's little things about it that I think are inhibiting them from a movement. Like I think their response, mental response is good. It just takes them too long to get there. Why? Maybe they're too much on their heels or their hands are behind their hips or whatever that is. Be able to show them in these moments, because some of the kids kinesthetically can't feel it. Right? They don't know exactly where their body is in space because it's what they've always done. But when you can show it to them, hey, all of a sudden they may have the aha moment, but it doesn't take much within the middle of a training session, not even wait till a session is over, pull them aside, show it to them. They go back and go, can we fix it? So I think that's, you know, that's a really good thing too. And the second piece is, you know, Kat had mentioned decision-making in, you know, the recruiting aspect and looking at players and what is their decision-making, because we really want good decision makers. And sometimes that decision-making has to do with starting position. Is if we're in a poor starting position, we can't make, or we don't make the decision to come win a ball, a through ball, or instead of winning a ball that we could come and deal with our feet, we have to win it on the ground, or a ball that we just maybe won't come for because we're too deep, or the other aspect of that is, and I talk about being on the front foot, and some people talk about being on the front foot of sort of this just a process or a thought or what it is. But I mean, physically being on the front foot, and Billy and I have talked about being in a sprinter stance, one staggered stance, one foot forward. If you're not in a position that you're going to have to deal with a shot, then I believe that you should have a little bit of a staggered stance. And then every ball that gets looked and potentially played through, there's almost a leaning or a balance that comes forward. So just my little two cents on those things.
Yeah. Good. George, go ahead.
Yeah, what's interesting is we've had multiple guests, you know, say something very similar about the whole aspect of that there isn't enough communication.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if there's something that you do that maybe you could share with the audience, even if it's a little helpful hint, because obviously, you know, we all understand the terminology. I mean, We know the words, but there might be people out there that could use an idea too. So I'm just curious maybe what you've seen or what you have in your toolbox.
Yeah, absolutely. But just one comment with Lotto, the stance. We talk about the starting position all the time, and I think that's a great point. You know, are you saving the space? You know, like, yeah. Are you protecting the space or are you protecting the goal? You know,
exactly.
Like, what does that look like?
A good point. So, that's a good way to, honestly, I've never heard that in just those exact terminologies. Like I visualize it and I'll use it. I like that. You have to protect the goal behind you, but you have to, I like the word protect the space between you and your back three, back four, whatever it is. I like
that. Let me interject on that point and see, and this is where I always believe that when people talk about vertical positioning, that it's just too vague to say it's, you know, the distance off your line or, you know, in because to me, it's not just about the distance. It's the goalkeeper's ability to protect the space in front of them as well as behind them. And I think that's always lost. It's just like, oh, look how high the goalkeeper is. It's not just about the distance off their line. It could be short or long. It's that ability that you're talking about. Are you protecting the space in front of you as well as behind you?
So. Yeah, see, I always say, can you win this space? Because it's also the distance between the last line of the defenders and the goalkeeper, how much space is in there. Because if it's too much of a gap, if I'm the other team, I'm just going to plunk balls in there and we're just going to run sprints at your goalkeeper. If it's close, if it's too close, then obviously we can play in front of it. But if the line is too high and the goalkeeper's too deep, then yeah, no, we'll just play balls into that space and see if we can win them.
But to answer, you know, George, your question about communication, I think it's really interesting. You know, I don't know if that loud, communicative, you know, cocky goalkeeper, you know, like ourselves when we were in our younger prime days, you know, I just think it's a really interesting, you know, time with the youth. There's a lot of like cell phones going on. They're in journal. They want to be, you know, correct before they say something. But I think it goes down to like, one, defining what communication means to your team. You know, what are those communicative, you know, step, drop, and, you know, tackle versus push up. I mean, and I think once you can get an established, you know, blanketed communication between the goalkeepers, the backs, the coaching staff, then you can kind of sit back and go, okay, I think, you know, now we want to focus on this word to this week, or this word this week, or these three words during training, you know, and are we using them in the correct time, or are we using them, you know, just to talk, you know, and understanding what the purpose is behind the communication, you know, because I think the communication leads to like influence. How are you influencing your team? How are you influencing your backs? You know, what is the influence of the goalkeeper? But I do think it's what does communication, and for all of us, communication is really easy for us. You know, like it's really easy to communicate, and we know what we're talking about, but for a 15-year-old, you know, what does that mean? Yeah. I think starting back at the basics.
Yeah. I like what you said, and you know, I'm gonna credit Brian Tompkins, my old boss over at Yale, and I love the fact that, and it wasn't just for goalkeepers, but he kept on telling the guys, you know, that communication is the glue. Mm-hmm. Communication is the glue, and you know, that always, you know, little pun, it always stuck with me. But but at the same time, you know, the importance of communication from the goalkeeper, from the vantage point, but also that organizational piece. And you know, again, when you're younger, you want to stay engaged and have action, but as you're older, you know, like, I don't want to see 10 shots, and if I could break it down verbally, then you know, more power to me. So I always find that to be, you know, a tough topic, because especially with the younger goalkeepers, because they don't know what to say. And I think you just touched on it in regards to their ability to feel comfortable to project their voice, because they want to be right. But I'd rather have a youngster say something wrong so that I can actually, you know, coach it. So
George, I was just going to make that line. Yeah. I was just going to touch on that. We'd much rather see errors of commission than errors of omission.
Yeah.
And our kids. And I think that, Kat, you alluded to that earlier. Kids today want to be safe and want to be correct before they do anything. And I think that, well, let's see you do some things. Mm-hmm. And then maybe we will talk about that. Lotto, I thought you
were talking. Yeah, and I think some of that comes from the environment that they're growing up in. And I say environment, let me contextualize it. Their playing environment, their under 10s, their under 12s, their under 14s, up the ladder. Are their coaches making it permissible to make a mistake and not be shunned for making a mistake, first of all? But also, I'm finding it baffling at a certain level to see coaches, or I should say, I see the goalkeepers first. I say, what's the command that you use with your team to do such and such? They're like, I don't know. They don't know, because their coach, their head coach, hasn't taught their team and has not taught their goalkeeper the command. Of okay, when I was doing a session the other day, this goes back a couple of weeks, sorry, ball gets flighted into the box. You're not coming to win a ball. What is the command that you use so your defenders know to distribute it away? You know, I like away, and I think some of our guys here like the word away. I just, there's more than clear. I had never liked clear or get it out or whatever it is, but I like away. And they're like, they look at me, and I'm talking 16-year-old solid goalkeepers. They look at me with a baffled look in their eyes, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me, you know? So the simplicity even of keeper to win a ball away. So your defenders know, everybody knows that the ball is getting played away. And, you know, things like that. And just, and then you add in the other small communication pieces as a head coach for your, you know, for your goalkeeper to your defenders when they're in a 1v1 situation or whatever it is. So there's, it starts at that level. So I think as much as we're goalkeeping experts, but we also have experiences within teams. And I think there's some responsibility that lies us and as coaches in general, as a whole, to help our goalkeepers communicate better.
Lotto, you are opening a can of worms. I'll go on for time about, you know, joystick players and coaches not allowing players to make decisions.
Yep.
And the goalkeeper doesn't know to tell his line, the defenders to step up because the coach does it on the sideline.
Right.
And the coaches will do that because they are evaluated by their outcomes and they can't allow, if they want to retain their position, they can't allow mistakes. And so the goalkeepers aren't allowed to make mistakes, so they don't do anything. And that touches back to Kat's point. They don't want to say anything unless they're right. Because again, this is how we have to kind of like turn the clock back a little bit and allow, okay, you know what? My kids are going to make mistakes, but they're going to learn. Versus my kids are going to make mistakes. We might lose. I might lose my job. And again, this is the vicious cycle that, you know, the professional youth coach has painted us into a corner here, so to speak. But again, like I said, I'm trying to cut myself off now.
Shucky, you had something, didn't you, Shucky?
I was just, to me, it always comes down to keeping it simple and letting the goalkeeper be a part of the training so that they know what's going on within the team dynamic so that they're more comfortable with the team and the team style and system. And then there's once they're aligned with the team, there's far less chance of some sort of communication mistake as opposed to, I know when we grew up, goalkeepers over on that half of the field for a half hour, kick balls at each other, come back and have no clue of what the team or backline objectives were. And then all of a sudden you didn't say anything because you didn't know what the heck was going on.
It's a good point, Shuki. And the first thing that comes to my mind is, and I think we talked about this in one of our early podcasts, and we were talking about sort of just training sessions. And as a team, one of the first sessions I've always liked to do in preseason is 1v1 defending. And that, you know, goalkeepers might be doing some exercises that have some relationship to dealing with a first touch to an angle, closing an angle, and not dealing with shots from straight on, but dealing with those from an angle. And our goalkeeper coach discussing that a little bit about where we want to turn attackers, if we can turn them out into wide positions to close the angle of the goal. Meanwhile, the team's doing some 1v1 shape, but the session ends with a 1v1 exercise to big goals with one defender coming and putting pressure. And we work on with the goalkeepers, we're obviously working on the defensive side of our defender, you know, how to step and close and how to slow and put pressure and guide it one way or the other. But we're also working on our goalkeepers and their communication to their defender of where they want that player to go, try to make it simplistic. And basically we're trying to put them into an angle that makes it easier for the goalkeeper. And in theory, the defender is taking away part of the far post and the goalkeeper deals with the rest of it. And if, for the life of me, I don't know that I've ever seen that exercise done real effectively in a youth environment, in a club environment, because I'm like, cause we get kids that don't know how to defend 1v1.
Well, I think your point's well taken, though, Lotto. I mean, I can just remember, you know, again, it's a bit of a crossover from basketball, but just, you learned, okay, in general, I'm going to show them to their left. Unless I know they're left-footed, I'm going to show them to the left. And as a goalkeeper, that just came out in me, again, partially because of basketball, other sports. It's just, okay, you know, if I'm in goal and somebody's coming with the one, show them left, guide them to the left. Because unless they're left-footed, that's their weaker foot. That's what I want them to take. If they do get a shot off, that's the shot I would rather face. And again, I think part of that comes down to just, and again, I'm getting on a soapbox again a bit, but just
get
to,
on it, Billy.
You know, having kids. Yeah, I live up there. I got residency. But it's just that, you know, again, we don't allow free play where kids will learn this, because again, if they're in a coaching environment, they don't want to be seen making mistakes. So I'm not going to say anything because the coach might think it's a mistake, versus I'm playing here, ain't nobody around. So I'm going to tell you, yeah, show them to the left. And if I screw up, oh, yeah, so what? But they learn from it. And so I think,
Bill, here's the one thing that we always get when we do that session for the ones that haven't done it before, be it goalkeepers or defenders. The goalkeeper might be saying, force him left, but the defender is thinking, put him on his left. So we have to clarify that, you know, we try to make it directional. Force him left, which means force him to our left, the goalkeeper's left, the defender's left, or force him right. You know, and eventually it slips out. They're like, we know he's left-footed, put him on his right. I'm like, how about we simplify the communication? Force him left.
I used to talk, now again, Kat, I know your background, but Chris Santo, do you remember Chris Santo, Kat?
Yes.
Yeah, nice guy, good defender.
Yeah.
Nice guy, but he wasn't the sharpest tool in the shed. When I would set a wall, you know, Chris, one step left. And, you know, he's facing the ball, his back's to me. He'd turn around to me and go like, well, your left or my left? And going like, Chris, when you were facing the same, your left was my left. And we were just, it was comical. It was comical. But.
And we tend to go force, you know, outside, out wide, you know, inside, outside, you know. I'm like, I'm dyslexic. I don't know if there are players that I get, you know, left and right, but, you know, yeah, I think it's like, just to touch back on that session that you're talking about, Lotto, and preseason, we sit down as a staff and go over every practice and what the outcomes are, you know, and what we want. And then our goalkeeper coach tailors her warm up to exactly what we're doing. And we're all on the same page, you know, and how do we communicate? Like, we know what we're doing. And then even when we have team meetings, we'll let the goalkeepers, like, what did you see here? And let them lead some of those breakdowns so that communication piece is all on the same page. But
awesome.
Every practice is thought through in the sense of how does it lead to that final, you know, piece. And then trying to get the goalkeepers involved as quickly as possible. So.
Absolutely.
Well, how many times you probably could go to a session and then there's not that communication between head coach, assistant coach, goalkeeper coach, and you look over and the goalkeepers are doing, you know, breakaway training or whatever they're doing. And then they come into a session and the coach is working on build up to flank play and pattern runs. And like, there's no communication here.
Should have been doing crosses. Damn.
All right. Kat, this has been great. It's been over an hour, so we don't want to take up more of your time, but it was been great catching up and chatting with you about this. We could carry on, I don't know, till all hours. But we appreciate your time. Good luck in the upcoming, hopefully, championship season in the spring with your program, and just we look forward to good things for you. All right.
Well, it was great seeing you guys, and thank you guys so much for having me on. Always fun. But yeah, no, it's awesome. Thanks.
We hope you enjoyed that episode at the Goalkeeper Roundtable. If you'd like to reach out with suggestions, comments, or questions, all of our email addresses are available in the show description. If you like the show, we'd love for you to subscribe to it, but also share it in social media platforms or with any other goalkeeper or coach who may find value in it. We hope you turn in to the next Goalkeeper Roundtable.